Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
We return to a frequent subject on our program, preparing for retirement. And as we have emphasized a number of times on past programs, successful planning for retirement means much more than setting aside and investing the funds you will need to support a comfortable lifestyle. Successful planning also means having a plan of how you and your spouse, if married, want to live out the rest of your life and leave a legacy, not just financially, but spiritually, for your children, grandchildren, and for generations to come. And in his book, our next guest, certified financial planner and author Gary Williams, eloquently sums it up this way: the key is to retire to something, not from something. I love that statement. And Gary Williams is president of Williams Asset Management in Columbia, Maryland, but they do counseling to people throughout the country. He has more than 19 years' experience as a financial counselor. He's a certified financial planner, a chartered retirement planning counselor, and an accredited investment fiduciary. And he's author of the new book, The Art of Retirement, Create a Masterpiece, and a frequent contributor to noted financial publications, including Money Magazine, The Business Monthly, and Wealth and Retirement. And hello, Gary, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Hi, Roy. Thanks for having me along for this interview, and I appreciate the opportunity to tell you more about my book, and go from there.
Well, in your book, you suggest using Michelangelo's life and art as a blueprint for creating your own retirement masterpiece. This is the most interesting but unusual concept. Can you please explain what you mean by using Michelangelo as a kind of a blueprint?
Sure. You know, most retirement planning books are sort of dry. It's a concept or a topic that doesn't excite the average reader. So I wanted
time reading, it'll put you to sleep.
for most people, that's true. And so I wanted to make it a little bit more fresh, and I wanted to make it a little bit more interesting. So yeah. What I've done is I've used Michelangelo's life and artwork as a metaphor to compare your life to a masterpiece.
Yeah, and why not?
Yeah, Michelangelo had it.
Why not consider your life a masterpiece? That's great.
It truly is. It's unique. You know, everyone's life is a piece of art.
Yeah.
And Michelangelo had such a phenomenal career. He was a painter, an architect, yeah, a poet, a sculptor. He lived to age 85 when the life...
I was amazed to read in your introduction that he was past 70 when he got the job as architect of St. Peter's Basilica.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So he had a phenomenal life and phenomenal, obviously, artist. And using that as the backdrop, I tell the story of, you know, how to plan for retirement.
Yeah. And I love the way you say a well-crafted portfolio along with a fulfilling life and a legacy. Those are the three things really you're seeking to do.
Truly is. And really anyone of any age could appreciate that, I think.
Well, let's say you're nearing 50, maybe you're even past 50, and you've given little, if any, thought to retirement. You have a good job, and you've made some contributions to your employer's 401k, and you've been saving some, but you've been enjoying the good life, but you awaken one night, maybe you wake up in the middle of the night to a stark realization that you'll be retiring from your present job and maybe 10 to 15 years or even less, and you have to get busy planning your retirement. Where do you start?
That's a great question, and hopefully it's not when you're 50 that you're realizing you need
yeah,
to
not, but...
You know, I'm personally 43 years old now, and I've been thinking about it for a while, and just sort of crafting my vision of how I see retirement playing out while enjoying life today, because I think it's a fine line between living for today and planning for the future when it comes to money.
You can't postpone all the pleasures of being alive and enjoying today just to plan for a future, because who knows? You'll even have one. I mean, we all are human beings, and you don't know how many years you plan for a long time, but you can't be certain of it.
That's right. Life is fragile. We've all seen people leave this planet at a too young of an age.
Yeah.
You don't know how long we're going to be here, but at the same time, you need to be prudent and plan for the future.
So you would start with a general lifestyle plan before you'd develop the specific financial plan, or what's the best way to go about that?
I think it's in tandem. I think that you need to, you know, follow the sage advice that's well publicized of saving a certain percentage of your income, you know, whether that's 10, 15, 20%.
Yeah.
It depends on what kind of lifestyle you want to have at retirement, when you're planning on retiring.
Yeah, I love the concept of paying yourself first. I don't know why more people don't do that on a regular basis. It's just such a good habit to be in, to set aside that 10% or whatever the money may be before you start budgeting your activities for the month.
Exactly. If you get into that habit and just pay yourself first, set aside 15% from the day you start getting a paycheck.
It's easy.
It's live with the means that are left over after you've done that.
Yeah.
And saving becomes really easy.
Yes, that's true. Well, more and more baby boomers, after they retire from their primary jobs, are choosing to continue to work, hopefully not because they have to, but because they choose to. And in your book, you give some wonderful examples of retirees who turned hobbies or special interests into bountiful second careers. Can you give a couple of those stories? Because I think they're very inspiring to the rest of us.
And that was the goal of Chapter 3, is to help you get the juices flowing so you can really think about what you want to do in retirement. It could range from a doctor an eye doctor that now travels to third world countries and performs surgeries on those that otherwise wouldn't have means or the type of doctor in their location to help them.
He's broadening his horizon and going around the world seeing all these things and places he'd never seen before.
It's win-win.
Yeah.
A photographer that takes his hobby and starts to then in retirement sell his photographs to newspapers and in this particular case Sports Illustrated.
Oh, I'll be darned.
I talk about a writer that has published a couple different novels. He always enjoyed writing, and it was on the bucket list to write a book, but finally got around to doing it.
No, that's so great to be in a position where you can really do something you love, whether it makes a lot of money or not. That it doesn't have to be about money. It has to. It's to be how you want to spend your time and most productively. And if you can provide something of value to others, that even makes it all much more.
That is so true. You know, I've been blessed to see folks from all different socioeconomic backgrounds, and I've seen individuals that have saved a lot of money in their retirement, but they're either hesitant to spend it or they don't know what they want to spend it on.
Yeah.
And but they did a great job saving. They just didn't give enough time and energy and thought to that other concept that we were just talking about, is what do you want to do?
Pretty tragic if you're sitting around wondering what to do with yourself all day. Maybe you're watching TV all day, or you're complaining to your spouse. I've heard of couples that, you know, after the gentleman, and usually it's the gentleman, but it could be the woman, after they retire, they really get on their wives' nerves just by complaining, sitting around the house bored and, you know, with no real direction in their lives, and they keep talking about what they used to be and what they used to do, and that's a tragic circumstance.
It is.
In these times of 24/7 news from cable TV and the internet and all these talking heads, and it's very easy to become overwhelmed by financial news, good or bad. I know I tend to get nervous when the Dow goes off like 200 points or the S&P's down 25. What's the best way to rein in your emotions so that you avoid making costly mistakes? And I'm not a trader, so I shouldn't be all that concerned about what the Dow does on a particular day, but it's easy to get caught up in that.
Very easy to get caught up. I just got off the phone with a prospective client that said to me, in January, I thought we were going into, we were going to have a correction, and then the market bounced back in February. And right before he told me that, he said, "I go to work at 4:30 in the morning. I get home at 5 o'clock, and I barely have time to read the paper." And I said to him, "Well, what made you think that there was going to be a correction?" And it was those few moments during the day that you can spend reading the news and seeing those headlines on the various financial websites of expert quote expects market correction 10 to 20% in 2014. That's eye popping. You know, it's something that we will click and say, "Who is this expert and why does he think this?"
Yeah.
But that, in my opinion, is nothing but noise.
Yeah, or you could tune in Jim Cramer in the evening and get all the great advice.
and understand, you know, self-awareness is a key here.
Yeah.
Understand that, you know, whether it's Jim Cramer or other news programs, much of it is for entertainment purposes only.
Yeah, that's true.
And the smart and prudent investor determines what their risk tolerance is, spends a lot of time figuring out how much risk capacity they have, investing based on that risk capacity for whatever goal that they have. And those individuals are going to be content when the markets are going up and they're participating, but they're not going to be distraught when the markets are going down.
Yeah, and they're invested long term, and if they don't need the funds out right away, they sit back and watch with interest, but not with panic.
Exactly.
Well, we're also bombarded, as you know, by financial advice, as you just mentioned, these experts. The thing that bugs me the most, I think, are these constant radio and TV ads telling us to buy gold and silver. I get so sick of those, I flip them off. What's the best way to pick out who you should listen to and who to ignore?
That's a great point, and that you're right. There are so many individuals that refer to themselves as financial advisors, and they may be a holistic financial advisor that's looking at your investments, insurance, financial planning, estate planning, etc., or they may be focused on one particular product area, like gold or like annuities. So I think you need to find somebody that you feel comfortable with, that is, you know, independent, that can look at your entire situation and determine what your needs are and fulfill those needs with a broad array of products and services. And, do your research. You know, find out the experience of this individual, what their education background is, its public record on disciplinary actions. Make sure that the individual that you're dealing with hasn't been subject to lawsuits that are unexplainable, or in general, just lawsuits that don't make sense. And most of them, make sense. And just doing your background searches. And
Had a sad experience. My wife and I, was a few years back, we had several hundred thousand that we wanted to put with an advisor, and we specifically told this advisor that we wanted like 3/4 of it in a very sound annuity type product. And I was thinking of an index fixed annuity, and maybe put a fourth of it hanging out in the growth type fund. And this guy stuck us in an annuity that turned out to be a variable annuity, even though in the session he kept talking about a 7% guaranteed annual return. And I guess I wasn't listening very carefully, because the truth was you had to die to get that return.
Oh.
And of course then 2008, 2009 came, and about half of our portfolio disappeared overnight. Eventually it crawled back to close to where it started before we dumped the guy and put the money elsewhere. But turned out he was basically a commissioned salesperson for a particular insurance company that sold these annuities. And yet he claimed to be a sound advisor for retirement planning and all this kind of stuff. So it had an impressive office, too.
Yeah, you're going to need to be so careful. And annuities may make sense for certain individuals. They're somewhat complicated sometimes, yeah, with various fees and components that, yeah, are sometimes difficult to understand.
Yeah. No, I can't believe with all my background that I didn't understand what I was getting into. It was as much my fault as this agent's, but still not the kind of financial advisor that a person needs, because he should have right away said, well, your circumstance, you don't want to be in a variable annuity. You want to keep a major portion of your portfolio in safe ground, and he should have been telling us that rather than putting us at risk in the entire investments that we were making.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in your book, you point out the dangers of haphazard financial planning. Is there some kind of software or something available that you can acquire, or you can get through an advisor that consistently allows you to analyze and compare your needs versus your resources so that you know just where you stand and whether you're on track with what you're trying to do?
Sure. Yeah. Many people don't understand really what financial planning is.
Yeah.
And it's an analysis in general of your financial situation and making forecasts, whether that's for education planning or retirement planning or doing a needs analysis on life insurance or disability insurance. And there's three ways to do this. There's the haphazard approach, where you just say, I'm going to save as much as I can, and I'm going to invest it in XYZ investment.
Yeah.
That's the worst way to do it.
Get a hot tip from...
if it's a hot tip, run the other way.
Yeah.
Run the other way. The second way to go about financial planning is to use rules of thumb. I talk about some rules of thumb in my book, and this is better than the haphazard approach. But
yeah,
rules of thumb are just that. They're very general. They don't talk to your specific situation. And like we were talking about before, everyone is unique. Everyone has their own masterpiece.
Yeah.
And so the best way, in my opinion, is to use today's sophisticated software that's out there and to run the analysis. And this could be done with a financial advisor,
yeah,
or there's plenty of software programs over the internet or off the shelf, some of which have areas that might not be as robust as what a financial advisor,
yeah,
can offer, but they still are better than the rules of thumb in most instances.
If I were looking for that on the internet, what would I Google type in to find something like that?
Probably something such as financial planning software.
Yeah, that's pretty straightforward. I guess that's where I'd start.
Some of it's free. A lot of mutual fund companies will put out free software and run some analysis. Now, will it be complex enough to deal with your situation? For example, if you want to downsize your home in retirement, take the equity out of your home and buy a smaller home, is it going to allow you to plug those types of variables into the software?
Oh,
my guess is not.
Yeah.
And my guess is that could make a major impact to your retirement plan.
Yeah,
so
that's why it's probably best to have a financial advisor on hand, unless you're really competent and comfortable with what you're doing. And that doesn't mean you're competent just because you're comfortable, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think you hit a hit an important point there. For me, you know, and I talk about this in chapter 9 of the book, is how do you determine if you can do your own financial planning?
Yeah, that's a good question. How do you determine that?
Well, it's three things, in my opinion, and I call them the three T's: time, training, and temperament.
Yeah,
do you have the time, right? How much time is dependent on your aptitude. It's dependent on the complexity of your situation. Is it an hour a day, an hour a week, an hour a month, an hour a year?
Yeah.
That's to be determined.
Yeah.
But nobody's going to tap you on the shoulder and say, you spent enough time working on your finances today.
True.
Training, do you have to read one book or 10 books or become, have a degree in finance? Again, this is very subjective.
Yeah.
And, you never know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And I still learn things 20 years into the business.
Yeah, you have to keep learning, just like doctors constantly have to learn new things. The way things are changing and technology and everything, it's a constant battle to keep up.
Yeah. And then finally, temperament is, can you look at your situation objectively and make decisions based on that? If the market's going down.
I considered trading a few years ago and these courses and stuff. But when I found I didn't have the temperament for that and I lost thousands and thousands of dollars. Fortunately, it was just paper money. I wasn't dumb enough to invest real money in it, following all these rules, so-called rules of trading, not day trading. I wasn't into that, but, the short-term trading. And I decided I didn't really have the temperament for that, so I sort of abandoned that idea and just invest long-term now. But
sounds like you made a wise move.
Well, as you plan for retirement, what's the best way to determine your risk tolerance and also, of course, your capacity to take risks?
Well, I do think that this is the first and most important step of investment management.
Yeah.
And there's various ways to figure this out. Most investment firms, whether it's a mutual fund company or a financial advisor, will have you start with a questionnaire.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
it could be 15 to 30 questions long, and answering questions relating to how much volatility can you take. If you saw your portfolio go down X%, what would you do? To having just a discussion with the financial advisor or investment company about it, about that questionnaire.
Yeah.
And but in the book, I also use some of the tools that I learned back when I was studying finance and statistics, using what's called the Z table.
Yeah.
And I take this complex statistical way to determine how much volatility a particular portfolio may have had or did have in the past, using its average return and standard deviation to give you an idea of if this portfolio that you're considering or this portfolio that you're in right now is too volatile for you.
I see.
So
it's a probability
analysis.
The buckets where you divide your needs into buckets of essentials versus money you can afford to put at risk and do that kind of analysis so that you always make sure you're not risking the the store on something that you shouldn't be risking.
That's right. You got to have that safety net of a certain level of assets there that if all else fails, you're not going to have to go back to work if you don't want to.
Yeah, that's the saddest thing when you think of a 75-year-old person struggling at McDonald's, say, at the checkout counter. Some people might enjoy meeting people and doing that, but if you're just doing it because you have to, it's pretty sad. And I don't not singling out McDonald's, obviously. I've seen examples of that in other kind of work that they do. How about gate guards at private housing complexes.
It could be anything. And like you said, if it's something you enjoy doing, that's one thing. But if you're doing something because you have to pay your bills to live, that's something we want to avoid.
I wouldn't want to be out there in 10 below zero collecting tolls on the George Washington Bridge or something like that.
No way.
Well, in your book, you encourage legacy planning. And what is that, and how is that different from financial planning? And how do you get started on legacy planning?
Most people think about estate planning and legacy planning as how do I transfer my wealth to the next generation or to a charitable cause that's important to me and my family.
Yeah.
But one thing that I talk about in the book is something called the use of an ethical will.
I like that a lot. I saw that concept. Tell us about that.
An ethical will it's not a legally binding document.
Yeah.
Most people will attach it to their wills.
Yeah.
And it clearly states why you made some of the decisions in your will, what your aspirations are for the use of your financial assets.
Yeah.
Again, it's not legally binding.
Yeah.
It's a way to share with your heirs and future generations some of your greatest accomplishments in life, about your values, and about maybe some mistakes that you made and what you learned from them, so that your future generations don't make the same mistakes.
Yeah. I love that you cited in your book the 2005 research that showed baby boomers were much more interested in learning about their parents' ethics and faith than about their financial assets. And I think that's so true. When you look back at the legacy your parents left to you and what they did in their lives, it's great to have that kind of a statement.
I don't think I've ever met somebody that said, I can't wait for somebody to die so I inherit money. Or, you know, I was waiting on this inheritance.
Yeah.
You know, sure, everybody knows it's there, you're going to receive it, but it's not that, that's not the important part, in my opinion, of legacy planning. It's your memory will fade over time.
Yeah.
You know, personally, I lost my mom when she was 40 years old. I was only 8 years old. I lost my father when he was in his mid-60s. I wish I had that opportunity, because we were talking about life is fragile. We don't know when we're going to leave this planet. But I wish I had that opportunity to learn a little bit more from my parents than I had a chance to. And an ethical will can help you do this. Unfortunately, many people don't even do their wills until they're in their 50s or 60s.
No.
But they should be doing it well before that. In my book, I talk a little bit about how to go about creating an ethical will and about legacy planning and the steps that you need to follow.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about your book, The Art of Retirement. I know you have two sections in there. One's on creating your masterpiece, and the other is practical, the art of investing, and some practical advice that tell us a little about how you divide that book up.
Sure. In the first part of the book, I talk about some of the things that you need to consider that aren't really money-related.
Yeah.
I talk in Chapter 1 about perspective, and I use an example of my good friend O.J. Bergantz, who used to play for the Baltimore Ravens but has unfortunately become stricken with ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease.
Wow.
And this is the guy that inspired me to write this book. And I can talk more about that in a moment. But he cannot move any part of his body except his eyes and his mouth. He talks through a computer by looking at a computer screen, and that computer then, what he types in using his eyes, then speaks what he said. So that in and of itself is horrible, but what's inspiring is how O.J. lives his life. He goes to work every day for the Baltimore Ravens. He wakes up 3 hours in advance just to get ready. And still goes on vacation. He runs his foundation, the Bergantz Brigade Foundation, which I am privileged and honored to be on the board there. And, you know, so perspective is important. You may not have saved enough for retirement. Your health may not be perfect. You may not yet have found what you're passionate about doing, but you can still make the most of what you have. Count your blessings.
That's for sure. And that's important to count those blessings instead of all the things wrong in your life that so many people do.
It could always be worse.
Yeah.
I can guarantee it. I talk about the noise that we mentioned earlier, just avoiding that. I talk about, as we talked about in Chapter 3, giving you some ideas to get your juices flowing of what you want to retire to instead of retiring from.
Yeah.
Chapter 4, I talk about legacy planning. Chapter 5, I talk about what financial planning is and what it's not. And then in the second half of the book, I talk about risk. I talk about why diversification is important. And some things that you may not have thought about in the past, such as high-frequency trading. I wrote this book over the past few years, but high-frequency trading hasn't really made it to the forefront until last week when Michael Lewis came out with his book called Flash Boys, and it's gotten a lot of press, to, you know, how to diversify, how to select a financial advisor, how to do it on your own or figure out if you can do it on your own.
Yeah, so, that's certainly a great combination of starting with the overall concepts and then some practical advice on how to get down to the nuts and bolts of getting the job done. Where best can listeners obtain your book?
They can go directly to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com and type in The Art of Retirement.
Yeah,
you could also
find there. I know I found it on.
You could also go to theartofretirement.org and find out a little bit more about why I wrote this book. You know, 100% of the profits from the book will be going to 4 different charities that are important to me and my family, including the Bergantz Brigade Foundation.
Yeah, I was very impressed by that, and I would think that would be another good reason to buy the book, not to mention that obviously it's of great value to the person who buys it, but you're also giving to some really good causes.
So that's where you can find the easiest places to find the book. There's a number of bookstores that have the book as well. Here locally, there's the Barnes & Noble store in Ellicott City, Maryland, has the book. But if you're not in Ellicott City, you can find it online.
Travel across the country to get it. But I know you also on your website for your firm, www.williamasset.com. You can find it there as well, because that's where I went. And if someone was interested in obtaining or in retaining Williams Asset Management as their financial advisor, how should they get in touch?
They can contact me via phone at 410-740-0220. They can send me an email at Gary, G-A-R-Y, at williamsasset.com. My last name, Williams, and asset, A-S-S-E-T.com. And I'd be happy to speak with any listeners and seeing if I can assist them with their financial planning and investment management.
Yeah, that's certainly something that some people might want to consider. And thank you so much, Gary, for joining us today and reinforcing our program's twin retirement planning themes. First, you need a sound savings and investment plan to ensure a comfortable retirement. Beyond all else, please don't outlive your resources. That's a really sad situation when you see somebody that's in their late 80s or thereabouts or worried about how they're going to finance or maybe being on Medicaid and forfeiting all the remaining assets just to live out life in a nursing home, but also that planning for retirement is about much more than just the money. And let's all keep in mind at all times Gary's sound advice: retire to something, not from something. And best of success to you, Gary, in the sale of your book and in all your other ventures. And thank you so much for joining us.
Roy, thank you so much for having me.
Have a great day. Our second guest today is here to address a subject nobody likes to talk about, end-of-life planning. At middle age, do you face one or both of these challenges? You may have aging parents who never want to talk about preparing or updating a will or about their plans and wishes when they die, and you're still relatively young and don't expect to die anytime soon, but do you have in place a solid plan to protect your spouse and children should you die unexpectedly? And our second guest today is Tim Pelton. He's a former fire chief who has witnessed firsthand more than his share of unexpected sudden deaths, and he's now an author, an entrepreneur, and an end-of-life expert. He was over 25 years as a firefighter with special training to provide mental health support to emergency responders all across the country. And his deployments included school shootings, aircraft crashes, and he was there after 9/11. And he's sole survivor of a family of five. His mom, dad, brother, sister all died at relatively young ages from health-related issues. So he has witnessed the impact of untimely death and what that can have on surviving family members. And he's author of the new book, The Ultimate Family Gift, Peace of Mind Through Personalized End-of-Life Planning. And hello, Tim, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Good morning, Roy, and it's a great pleasure to be here.
Well, a lot of us at middle age are members of the sandwich generation, caring both for our own children or one or more aging parents, whether they're in our home or close by or even far away. And we're often caught in a dilemma. We know mom or dad should be making end-of-life plans, but the parents never want to talk about it. Could you give us some ideas of how we can approach mom and dad and break the ice and get them talking about their plans for funerals and all that kind of, and will and all that kind of stuff?
You bet. And let's respectfully talk about seniors for a minute.
Yeah.
It's my experience that most seniors are uncomfortable talking about end-of-life planning or what should happen when they pass away.
Huh.
I get it. I understand. People are often reluctant to talk about the subject because it reinforces their mortality.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, I, for one, am only 66 years old, but I understand that by any measure, my gas tank of life is down to a quarter of a tank. That's why I'm so passionate about talking on this subject.
That's the way I don't like to look at it, but it's certainly true.
Well, like Ben Franklin said, the two things inevitable in life are death and taxes.
Yeah, that's true. And actually, of course, it all depends on your attitude toward life after death, and it can be something to look forward to.
Right.
Like you say, it can be like going to a trip to Disneyland.
Yep, we do all the planning for all the elements and the plane fares and the hotels and what parks we're going to go see when we go to Disneyland.
Yeah.
But sometimes we don't put that same attention to detail planning in that other trip.
Yeah, I just can imagine how awful it would be if you were lying there in moments right before you knew you were going to die soon and you thought of all those things you should have planned for before and you didn't. So how do you approach mom or dad, really, to get them on the subject? What's a good way to do that?
Yeah, I want to share some ideas with your audience that might be helpful in how to start the ultimate conversation with your parents or any elderly loved one.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to confront them directly, I suggest that people take a more subtle approach and talk about someone else first. As an example, let's say your mailman no longer delivers the mail because she had a heart attack.
Yeah.
And you can talk about how unfortunate it was and hopefully she'll be back because she did such a great job delivering the mail before. And now therein lies an opportunity to throw out a simple observation, not even a question, but an observation to say, "Gee, Dad, I hope nothing like that ever happens to you." And usually there's a pregnant pause and people don't know quite what to say.
Yeah.
And then I encourage people to throw out, and what would we do if you had a heart attack?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. What would we do, and how would we, what would you want to do if it was that situation?
Right. That same church, different pew. We all know that cancer can be a deliberating and a morally exhausting disease. And some cancers are curable. That's great. And
yeah.
Some are not. But it's extremely rare these days to find people that have not been impacted by cancer in some horrific way, shape, or form. And
yeah.
just I encourage your listeners to look amongst their family and friends, and if there's a cancer situation to discuss, let's discuss it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a little hard, but throw out a phrase, oh, did you hear about Mary?
Yeah.
She's got cancer.
Yeah, that's very true.
And so begins another segue to the challenging conversation. Again, we're not confronting our parents that we love dearly head on, because
yeah.
we know that, you know, sometimes they can be just a little obstinate and just a little ornery.
Yeah, it's especially touchy if you're a son or daughter and a probable heir to your part of your
yep.
portion, parents.
Yep.
Portions to think they're not, you're not just discussing it for your own benefit,
right.
not theirs.
I never want to be accused of being the dirtbag, scum bucket, money-sucking son-in-law.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. Well, what are a few of the benefits, both to the aging parent and to us as surviving family members, in having a comprehensive plan? I know there's zillions of benefits, but...
Right. It dramatically reduces the stress factor, and we all know that grieving is an intensely emotional process.
Yes, it is.
And anything people can do to reduce having to make expensive decisions, painful decisions in a stressful environment, it is hugely beneficial.
Yeah,
and,
that's for sure.
You know, I want to reach out for a moment to the other side of the sandwich generation.
Yeah.
And those parents that are raising their kids.
Yeah.
And I have a five-step process that I'd like to briefly throw out and let them consider those options for a while.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Now, step one would be to have a living will or an advanced medical directive.
Yeah.
And that's a document that allows you to testify or outline how much medical intervention you would like to have if you were to become incapacitated.
Yeah, that's such a key when in a situation where the parent is incapacitated and the children don't know what to do.
Exactly right. And more importantly there, you appoint a person in your living will who becomes your representative.
Yeah.
If you are hospitalized or in a coma or
yeah.
Whatever. Step two, let's create a regular will.
Yeah.
You articulate what your assets are, who's going to get them, and who should be legally responsible to support and raise your kids.
Yeah, you certainly don't want to get into probate and have some stranger determine.
Yep.
Not
yep.
to mention the delays that always entails.
I often hear that the government is here to help, but sometimes I question their logic and approach.
Yeah.
And again, planning ahead doesn't all have to be about end-of-life planning.
No.
Step three is to create a financial plan.
Yeah, that's so crucial.
Because when I talk to people in that age group, the 30s, the 40s-year-olds, and I ask them what questions are keeping them up at night, the two common answers are, I have no clue how I'm supposed to afford to pay for three college educations for my kids,
yeah.
and what should happen to my family if something should happen to me.
Yeah, so, not to mention the lack of planning for retirement. That's
yep.
such a problem.
Yep. And the good part about hooking up with a financial planner, he or she can help you address all those issues of putting money aside for big events, and also, as you just mentioned, helping you with the retirement issues.
Yeah.
Step four, a little unique to me probably, but Ron, I'm a big promoter of a prepaid funeral plan.
Yeah, I can certainly see that because, like you say, the worst time to be planning a funeral is when you're grieving the loss of a loved one, and you always feel guilty that you didn't do enough for them in lifetime, so you run out and buy the most expensive funeral arrangements and caskets, et cetera, et cetera.
I couldn't have said it better. And, you know, why not remove the pressure of that painful decision-making process by simply planning ahead?
Yeah.
Shouldn't
yeah.
it be your decision whether you'd like to be buried in a casket or buried in an urn?
Yeah, that's for sure. And
last but not least is step five, let's create a well-thought-out funeral plan.
Yes.
And do you want a wake? Do you want a memorial service? Would you like nothing? All those are options.
Yeah, that's true.
Who do you want for pallbearers? Who would you like to do the eulogy? The more you line those things up ahead of time, the easier it is for your surviving family.
Well, you've written an excellent book called The Ultimate Family Gift. Tell us a little about that book and where somebody can find that.
Sure. As we mentioned ahead of time, one of the reasons I'm so passionate on this that I'm the sole survivor of a family of five.
Yeah.
And when you bury your family, you learn a lot along the way.
That's for sure.
I wrote The Ultimate Family Gift as a planning guide or a motivation for people to digest it and get a sense of what their plan should be. It's available on Amazon or Nook or Kindle or any of the e-book sources. And also, there's a wealth of information on my website, www.timpelton.com. It's all free. There are free reports, free videos, all designed to help people get started.
Yeah, I was going to highly recommend that anyone that has any end-of-life planning issues to go to that website, because there's three excellent downloads, 9 easy ways to start the ultimate conversation, 11 things you must do before you die, and terminal programming, and you like have 18 videos on there, too, that I found were excellent. So I would definitely highly recommend that you go to the website. You also offer a full package that includes the book. Tell us a little about that.
The full package is a book that is a call to action, and then there's a 3-ring binder to keep all of the information that your family will need. It ranges from a copy of your will to the deed to the house to what are the passwords on your computer, what is your funeral plan. If you're a vet, there's a form called the DD-214, which is your discharge papers, that all those are mission-critical documents that can all be kept in one neat 3-ring binder so your family can go through the grieving process and pay their respects to you, but maybe we can reduce the agony of the grieving process itself.
Yeah, I love the sentiment that you offer on the website and in the book that end-of-life planning is not so much about you. It's meant to benefit loved ones you are leaving behind. And what
Absolutely.
Better way is there to demonstrate your love than to take all that burden away for, it's so great to just concentrate on celebrating the life of a departed loved one and not having to deal with all those side issues that can be so traumatic and so heartbreaking.
Yep. And if one member of your great audience should say, you know what, this is starting to make some sense to me and I need to take some action, you have made my day.
Yeah, and that website is www.timpelton.com.
Yes, sir.
That's where they should go. And, Tim, you certainly made me do a lot of thinking, and sooner or not later I'm going to get to work on updating and enhancing my end-of-life plan. And I trust that all of you will do the same. And thank you so much, Tim, for being with us today. I know we just touched the surface, and perhaps you can come back on a future date and we can talk more about some of these issues.
I'd be happy to, and it's an honor and privilege to chat with you and your audience.
And audience, please tune in next week when we'll shift gears and talk about the real reason why you women nag and what we men can do about it. And thank you for joining Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.